Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. I'm glad you could come by this morning. We are still helping, I hope, and standing with the young woman that we spoke about over a week ago. The young woman who, under great duress and very little counseling, gave her child up for adoption. The whole scenario took place in a matter of days, and even before it had been actually finished or concluded or closed, she said she didn't want to, and they ignored her and didn't give her any choices. And yes, she signed papers, but she was under the influence of some Dilaudid and something else because she had had a cesarean. So, not to mention the mental duress she was already under. When I mentioned the fact that she was under the duress of the drugs, I say that because in most contracts, especially a contract like this, you're supposed to be of sound mind. And she was not. And if the powers that be had cared to pay attention to that instead of making their rather large sum of money and actually selling this new baby boy, then maybe this wouldn't have happened. I'm going to bring in Shell because I found some more things that I want to share with you today. When I researched again gentle care and when I looked online to see how many comments I could find, I was not surprised to find some good ones because, you know, they are in business and they've succeeded. But most of the happy ones are those, the adoptive parents, the people that are enriched now with the life of another child. So that's really not apples to apples for me. I think that obviously they're ecstatic. Who wouldn't be? So good morning, Shell. Are you there?
Yes, good morning, Rainey. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Hectic weekend, but a nice weekend.
That's good.
Did you have a nice day?
Yeah, you know what I did all day long? First, Spike made me breakfast, and then Diana made dinner, and I sat out here in my very empty, very large living room with the two recliners in it, and Spike and I watched movies all day. It was lovely. I didn't do another damn thing. I went to the store in the late afternoon because we needed to get some bottled water and stuff, so my son and I went to the store. But
Nice. Yeah, my sister and I spent time with my mom, and then we went and we saw both my different nieces, so it was a family day for us also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was nice. I said to my husband, I said, geez, I don't remember the last time I just sat in my chair and watched some wonderful movies, and movies that I'd never seen, which is unusual, all except for one old Clint Eastwood movie, the one where he guards the president and he is the entourage when he was a young man, and now he's an old man and he wants to guard the president. That was great. And we watched I watched The Lone Ranger, and I had been told The Lone Ranger was not a good movie. I loved it with Johnny Depp.
You know, it's funny because
Tonto,
a lot of the movies that that don't get good reviews, I always enjoy it. It's like unless it's a bad storyline. But a lot of these remakes, I like them. I don't know why they always get such critical reviews. So,
It was funny. It was very action-packed. And then we watched The Secret Window with John. It was kind of a Johnny Depp day, actually. We saw two with him in them. And and then we watched a couple scary ones. So it was interesting. My AJ came out and said, "Graham, I never saw you watch so many movies." I said, "I know." But it was nice, and that way Spike stayed relaxed, and his breathing is a little bit better today. We go to the doctors this morning. So I here's what I did, though, this weekend. I looked up gentle care. I tried to find a gentle care in Florida. I couldn't find that, but after I started finding some stories, I quit pursuing some of the other things that I thought about that I wanted to do when I started researching. But I was not surprised to find this, but I will tell you the most relevant statement that was made in regard to all of this is the fact that the people that are adopting the child have rave reviews to say about gentle care. But almost everyone who has given up a child under duress is regretful and hurt that they didn't have any other choices in the 11th hour. And it seems to me the 11th hour is the most important time during any life-changing event. I mean, every day we get stays of execution. We get mortgages that don't go through. I just thought I'd throw that in. we get a lot of stuff that happens in the 11th hour. And I struggle to understand why something as important as with so many tentacles that can reach through years now of lives and years of life, I guess is the best word to use. And yet, there's no time. It seems like if I was in charge of this, I would say, okay, let's do this. Let's see what it's like to believe that you've already given up your child for the next 10 days and then come back and let's talk. Doesn't that seem like a feasible thing to do? I mean, how many times would it change, I wonder, Shelley? How many times would somebody end up keeping their child? Now, mind you, I am not talking about the situations where there's no money, there's no home, there's no significant other. The challenges will be so great, no matter how big the love, that somebody has to step in and help. But I thought when they decided, that adoption was the way to go, so that we could do something about all the abortions, especially illegal abortions, and about the children that get left in front of churches and things like that. I thought that the whole idea of this was to make things better, right? Wasn't it supposed to be a beautiful thing?
I've actually heard of adoptions that did get overturned in the 11th hour, like you said, because the birth mother changed their mind. So there are adoption agencies that work that way. So why this one doesn't, I don't know. Why this one makes it so difficult to reverse the transaction, I don't know. And
well, I can tell you it's called $40,000.
Right.
And now this baby is in the hands of an orphanage.
Yeah, right, but some of these others take that kind of money also. What I'm saying is that, you know, and it comes down to everything else, and I'm not blaming the victim, but what I'm saying is when you're going to make a decision as something as life-altering as giving up your baby for life, there has to be some research. You have to, like, read the contract from at least two different agencies or contact an attorney or go on Better Business Bureau and see if there's any complaints, things like that. Because there are multiple contracts out there, obviously. If she wasn't able to overturn this adoption in the 11th hour, And meanwhile, I've heard of all these stories where they were, and it was the adoptive parents that got hurt because they paid all this money. In some cases, they even supported the woman, and still they were able to not have the adoption go through. And now these people are out like all the care money, you know, because usually these women
are... Yeah, but
are,
see, Carrie is telling me all of that depends on the state, number one. Each state has different laws. And she's also saying that when you're in crisis, you know, you're really in, I guess she's telling me that you're not up to, I mean, this is a smart chick. She's, I've been friends with her now for 4 years. And she's, you know, she's college educated. She's has a beautiful home, a beautiful family. She's, you know, this was like, if I can use the word fluke. And like I said in one of the comments, you know, there before God go any of us that could do something like this. But then at the end of the day, you are torn between, first of all, your judgment call that brought this on, and you're questioning, how many times have you done something and you're like, what the hell was I thinking? Right? A million, right? And then, but this, the repercussions are great. And she did go, and she did say, I don't want to do this. And she said all the things that she needed to say. But they pretty much bullied her. They pretty much let her know that they were in charge and that she had relinquished her rights. And she did that by signing the piece of paper. So when she came back and said, you know, you had me lie, you had me sign a paper when I was under the influence, I know better than all of that. But that just shows what kind of shape she was in, mentally and physically. But what the other stories that I read, everyone that said, oh, my counselor with Gentle Care or whatever other adoption agency I was looking at was wonderful. Well, of course, you got what you wanted. So that's your feeling. You know, if you go someplace like that and somebody tells you that they're going to find you a brand new healthy baby, as far as you're concerned, you know, they're the next best thing to peanut butter and jelly, right? I mean, hands down.
Right, but
what I did find...
By the women that were, by the birth mothers.
That say something good? Not one. Not
right.
One, Shell.
Right.
And in some cases, I suspect that it's because they're embarrassed. They don't want to talk about it anymore. They try to get to another place. But even other people have fought for this. This is, I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's very, very long, but it is addressed on a site called Adoption by Gentle Care, and it's comments, recommended reviews. I'm writing this review years after my experience with Adoption by Gentle Care. At first, my caseworker seemed very helpful. However, the financial situation that I found myself in after both parties, the adoptive parents and the adoption agency, got what they wanted is very upsetting. And what this adoption agency did to contribute to the situation seems unethical to me. I was 19 and kept the pregnancy from my father. I was assured by my caseworker that Medicaid would take care of everything. She was well aware that I had an insurance underneath my father. But because I didn't want him to know, she encouraged me to use Medicaid. Medicaid accepted me and paid for everything, including an ultrasound midway through the pregnancy and my C-section at OSU Hospital. Months after I handed the child over, I got my first bills from OSU. They told me that Medicaid denied my claims. Since I technically had insurance under my father, I got into contact with my caseworker but couldn't find the office I was given directions to drop the bills off, and she never answered her cell phone. I didn't have a car, and that trip downtown was so frustrating, especially knocking on the unmarked door that was supposed to be their office. I wish now that scanning, emailing, and faxing were as easy then for me as they are now. I didn't have a computer. I didn't have a smartphone. This was 2007, but I was young, poor, and very naive. Shortly after I received a phone call from a man trying to collect a payment for the hospital, I told him that the adoption agency was supposed to pay anything that the insurance didn't cover. He thanked me and never called again. I, once again naive, assumed he was researching the matter to ensure the bills would be taken care of. I was being young and irresponsible and ultimately had absolutely no guidance. The next time I heard about the bill was 3 years later, and I was called by Gentle Care, and they explained it was too late and they were no longer legally bound to pay for the hospital bills. I even contacted the adoptive parents. It was an open adoption, and explained the situation. After all, they have the child. Maybe they would help me with the cost of delivering the baby. But the mother told me that they only moved forward with the adoption because I was supposed to be covered by Medicaid. My insurance company won't accept claims that are older than 1 year. Ethically, it doesn't seem right that the adoption agency misled me in my insurance choice. It also seems wrong that even though they aren't legally bound to assist with bills after 1 year, they could still allow a teen who couldn't afford to give birth to a child and raise him to be stuck with a $13,000 medical bill. I had the C-section because I was encouraged by them to set a date to be induced only 3 days after my due date. For first baby, that's outrageous. This adoption agency encouraged me to do so to allow the adoptive parents to schedule their flight from California in order to be here when the child was born. In case you aren't familiar with the risks of inducing a birth rather than letting it occur naturally, this means the risk of a C-section increases dramatically. So 36 hours after being induced, I was told I had no choice but to have an expensive, life-altering surgical cesarean when the induction didn't work, which is very common, but I didn't know that at the time. And I am still paying this medical bill. I understand that much of this had to do with my ignorance and my lack of responsibility, but also they provided me with the wrong advice that has left me in debt ever since. And they most definitely did not care 1 ounce for me once they made their money from my case. Now, this is the reason I chose this particular story is because it's not always like it is for my friend. It's not always about the fact that now they're heart sick because they don't have their child. It is about irresponsibility on the part of the professional company. A 19-year-old girl is certainly old enough to use protection. A 19-year-old girl, there's lots of things that I could counsel her about after just reading that. And it wouldn't be in a bad way. It would just be, you know, come on, you know, wake up and smell the tulips kind of a thing. But everything that they did shows their lack of integrity. Everything that they did is almost like high finance. You know, it's all about the bottom line, and it shows in everything that they told her to do. They also insisted that my friend...
Is this also about a dental care office or a different adoption agency?
No, same office, same office.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And when I read down through, there's lots of points of view, and I read some lovely stories about parents who were so thrilled because Gentle Care found them a baby. And in most cases, there's a comment about, you know, I didn't care how much it cost me. So even though they don't tell you, you know that it was, you know, a large amount of money and it was all about the money.
Right, right.
They had my young friend also move up her cesarean. Just that alone deserves some scrutiny. Just that fact alone should be scrutinized by the powers that be, because it's true. About, how long ago was this? Maybe 20 years ago. there was a big thing on 60 Minutes about cesareans. And they talked at length about how doctors were insisting that a lot of their pregnant moms had cesareans, because that way they knew, the article I remember reading, they knew when they could keep their golf dates. Of course, it was being facetious,
exactly,
and all of that kind of stuff, but that's what it was about. You know, doctors wanting to take lengthy vacations and things like that, and having 4 or 5 pregnant women, and they'd knock out the pregnancies by a cesarean so that they could take their trip when they planned on taking their trip.
And
otherwise, I would imagine.
Right,
exactly.
Right.
And I can imagine that a, you know, a baby doctor is literally on call anytime, all time, every time. So
right.
I can see the dilemma. But I always thought way back 45 years ago or so, a lot of your gynecologists worked in an office where there was more than 2 or 3 doctors.
Right.
And the reason for that was so that they could have a little bit of time of their own. So all doctors saw all pregnant women, and all doctors were familiar with them all. So whoever was on call delivered the baby.
Right.
Now, some people would maybe not be happy about that. My first child, I went to these doctors. There were 5 of them, and everybody in town called them 50 fingers. Gross, right? But that's what everybody called them. And but when I delivered Spikey, we had come to Florida and gone back. I was waterlogged, literally waterlogged. I was so uncomfortable. And I delivered Spike almost a whole month early. And that was because I was suffering with great back pain. I went in. He examined me for the first time I ever met him and broke my water accidentally.
Oh, wow.
And sent me directly to the hospital. It was all the rest of that day and all night before I gave birth. And Spikey wasn't even lined up in the birth canal the way he needed to be. That's how, you know, early he was being born. So, but I didn't even know this man. This man didn't even really know me. And he was my first baby. Of course, at the time, because it was my first experience, I just thought it was that way for everybody until I had 3 more kids and realized it wasn't. So it's a very tenuous time for a woman. We talk about baby blues. We talk about postpartum depression. We talk about all those things that are very, very prevalent. People get them now. They understand all about that. I mean, there are women that didn't get put in jail after taking the life of their own child because of postpartum baby blues and all of the things that we call them now. So if we know about all of that, which we do now, how can an organization that professes to be in that business not take that into account? That's what floors
me. Question: You were going on a train of thought talking about the doctors that performed the cesareans in order to kind of control. Were there ever any regulations, hospital regulations, established that prevents doctors from just arbitrarily setting C-sections now?
I think there is now. I think that it's kind of in the mix now, but like everything else, if that's really what they want to do, they have ways to get around it. You know, I'm blood pressure is up on the mom. I'm worried about the baby being in distress. I mean, now they just know that they can't say, well, I have a golf date, so I'm doing a cesarean. So let's face it, honey.
It has to be
when,
a medical.
When,
in other
where
ways,
there's a will, there's a way.
Right. There has to be a medical reason now, not just a convenience
mm-hmm.
reason, basically.
Right. Right. So they've just learned how to play it. But everything about this, like I said, it's such common knowledge today about the duress that goes on in a woman's body when she's pregnant.
Right.
So how can an organization that is supposed to be all about doing something good, which they are, they should be, this should be first and foremost. You know, I mean, my warmth and love goes out to this young woman that I have come to know. However, last night when I was reading all this stuff and reading some of the other stories, I found myself thinking about this other family. I know how I feel about babies. You know how I feel about babies. Anybody who knows me knows how I feel about babies. And if somebody had told me, okay, Renee, this baby's going to be yours, here he is, and then I have to turn around and realize that it's going to be a fight for the rest of my life, and part of me wants him to be with who he needs to be with, because if you're a good person, that's really what you want. You want to know that that baby is with the mom that carried him, that delivered him, that is his blood. You want that if you're a good person. And I think that's why these people, even after a couple weeks, and I, you know, believe me, I've seen a couple pictures of this baby. They fell in love. There's no doubt in my mind. So now you have two families that are devastated. So something has to be done. And if there are other organizations that are doing this. Now, I'm being told in Pennsylvania you have 30 days to change your mind because of medication and postpartum, et cetera. Ohio has 0 days.
Wow.
See, so maybe that's apparently what's going to need to happen. There's going to have to be a meeting of the minds, and people are going to have to step up to the plate. And if some people believe it, we all know it's true. I mean, all the stories are out there for all of us to see all the time.
Yeah, so that's one of the things that surprises
me. She's fighting this.
That's one of the things that surprises me about this country, because once something has been fought to be enacted into a law because of fairness or ethics or morality or whatever, I don't understand why laws can't become national, why they always have to be state-run. So it means you can get treated fairly and ethically in Pennsylvania, but if you're in Ohio, the laws aren't there to protect you as well. I've never quite understood that about this country, you know, why laws go state by state instead of – isn't this – aren't we supposed to be like one country, and yet from state to state – and it goes this way with everything. It's that way in business. It's that way in insurance care and things like that. Unless it's a federally run program, you could, you know, like, because when I first moved here from New York, there were certain things that were done certain ways in New York, and I was shocked when I moved to Florida that things were so different here. And I was like, well, that doesn't make sense to me. You know, so something that's illegal or legal in New York isn't necessarily legal or illegal here in Florida, and like that throughout the rest of the country. That's something that's always seemed inefficient to me, that the states are actually like individual countries. It's kind of nonsensical. You know, if something's illegal or legal, then it's proven to be the reverse through common sense, through petitions, through things like that, become national. But it's not. It just stays in that one state that did the that did the research or that had the hearings on it, and then meanwhile other states are still languishing with inequities. And that's something that's always bothered me about this country.
Well, that's a great point. I wonder why that is, Shel. Do we have any idea why that is? Why, if we are the United States of America, then how is it laws of this magnitude are only instead of being United States-wide, they are state-by-state. Have you ever read anything about why that would be or how that is, how that came into being now? I don't get that either. I get, you know, like different laws that pertain to, like, I don't know, like if you live in a state where, like here, Florida,
Let's take Florida. Florida has different laws because of hurricanes and the ocean and all that kind of stuff, where, you know, you don't have to worry about that in some of your Midwestern states and things like that. But these kind of laws that pertain to people should be worldwide. They
right.
shouldn't just
right.
state by state. I suspect it's because, you know, I know I'm going to get some feedback from saying this, but I suspect it's because the laws are better when there's more women involved in the legislation, because the women are thinking about things that the men aren't. I'm not trying to take away from the men. I'm just saying that the maternal instinct is a little bit greater, and we understand the repercussions of something like this. State representative has asked my friend to help him change the law because her case is the reason why the Ohio law doesn't work. And they also have, she mentions to me that adoption agencies give a lot to political campaigns. But it still doesn't, even still, there's a missing link in here someplace. Because there must be. Because
well,
here
see, the
in
whole
Florida,
thing is, I told you that I watched Judge Judy in the People's Court and, you know, some of the court shows, and Judge Judy has said, and so has Judge Million, who's the People's Court judge, they both said that their jobs would be easier if laws were based on simple morality, but they're not, which doesn't make sense. Why aren't laws based on basic morality, you know? Everybody knows right from wrong. And if you do something that's unethical in the business transaction, if you create a contract that just weighs so heavily to one person or another, now some contracts, and listen to this, now some contracts can be overturned if there's no consideration. And what that means is that I can sit down here and I can create a contract, but the consideration is so unfairly biased in my in my favor, where the other person is basically being cheated right on paper, and if they sign that unwittingly, certain contracts can be overturned. Judges won't uphold them because there's just too much inequity in the text of the contract. So now you're talking about a business dealing, which is not something life-altering, which companies can recover from, okay? And here you have something that is life-altering. How is that contract being upheld when it's so unfair? The reason being is because, like you just said, each state is different. You know, one state is giving you 30 days and another state isn't giving you any time at all. And that's where I have issues. This is something that should be under federal laws. This is something that should be nationwide, not one state being fair and another state being unfair. Statewide laws should be things that are unique to that state. Like you said, we have different weather here in Florida than you do in New York. There should be different laws with regard to how houses have to be built, you know, different housing regulations, things like that. Those type of internal laws make sense to be state to state, because there's different information that would relate to the type of laws for people that are going to build houses and things like that, you know. But when you're talking about simple morality, business transactions, why would that be different from state to state? You know, it's either legal and fair or it's not legal and fair. You know, and that's where we trip ourselves up in this country, is that laws are set up to protect an outcome and not really to protect right or wrong, because there are some business transactions that are legal but not moral, and there are some business transactions that are actually moral but considered illegal. And that's another thing that I've had an issue with. And when you look at our law books, they go on for, you know, like 100 volumes of our law books. We've over-inundated ourselves with laws, and yet if they were just based on simple morality, you'd need like one book. So we've actually...
Listen, Michelle, listen, I've got Carrie on the line. So she called in so that, you know, she can give you the answers to some of the things that you're bringing up, whatever she knows about. She's been spending some time with some legal representation, so they're kind of helping her
Excellent.
Hi, sweetie. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning, Carrie.
Good morning.
So,
good morning.
Shall I think I some of the questions you asked a couple minutes ago, you want to address them to Carrie?
Yeah. Well, which ones? I went through a whole litany of them.
Well, we talked. You talked about. You talked about the morals and the legalities, and of course, we both said something about different states being different when it doesn't concern something that has to do with the morality of people, and that's her argument. And her argument is also being under duress, postpartum, any of those things, and then still being allowed to give consent and having it count for something. That's one of the things you're fighting, right, Carrie?
Yes, yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. And how are that? How is your legal representation leading you in regard to that? What are they? They agree with you, I take it.
Yeah, it's their legal argument. Is that my consent should have never been taken?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that basically the caseworker preyed on my crisis instead of
right.
acknowledging the red flags.
Right.
See, there's a lot of cases where a decision that happened, like how you were treated, if that happened in another business transaction, it would be called predatory, you know, like a predatory takeover or something like that. If something like that happened in a business where one side sort of strong-armed the other side or put due financial pressure or something like that, you know, those are known as predatory actions. And I don't understand why this particular business dealing, because that's actually what it was, although, you know, we're looking at adoptions as being hard. The bottom line is it was a business dealing. It was absolutely predatory.
Well, that's my lawyer's legal argument against them, is that they preyed on my fear. And she basically stalked me.
Wow.
And Shelley, understand this agency, and I'm sure a lot of them, they have a history of doing this. I mean, they've been basically calling my bluff for 5 weeks now and saying, come and get me. We may have done something wrong, but you're not going to do anything. No one ever fights us, so we're going to go forward with the adoption, whether it's ethical or not, and prove it in court, basically. Come and get us. Because they don't think I will.
Wow.
That's
well, it's like all those. Yeah, it's like all those kind of things. You know, they always feel bigger and better than we are, and that doesn't necessarily have to be true. If we, Shelley and I've done a lot of stories in a lot of different scenarios, and of course, for me, this is one of the most important stories I've ever had anything to do with because it's about the life of a child. And, of course, that's how we started this. We started this whole radio show because of our concern for what happens to our children. And,
right.
You know, today on Facebook, when I talk to everybody about, you know, when I posted that we're going to talk about this again today, I can't get past one thing that really, really bothers me, is there's all the obvious things like Carrie didn't want to lose her little boy. She felt like she was between a rock and a hard place. Carrie carried the baby pretty much full term and then was coerced into not just giving up her child, but having a cesarean. Were your other children delivered by cesarean? Carrie?
They were. I was supposed to have a C-section, but she encouraged me to move up my date because I was in a panic. And now looking back, she didn't want me to change my mind. So she wanted me to do it very quickly while I was in crisis.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, that's even worse. And then all the other things that have happened, the manifestations in our world today of something like this taking place. How many stories have we done? I can only speak for myself as to how many people through the last 15, 20 years that I've counseled that have felt like they're in the wrong place. you know, because of stories like this, because they never felt like they were where they were supposed to be. And Renee, why didn't my real mom love me? I've heard that a million times. So the manifestations of something like this have to be taken into account as well. This isn't just hurting Carrie and the baby. This will eventually have a trickle-down effect that will hurt a whole bunch of people, because that's what happens, because it wasn't supposed to be.
All right, well, see, that's the key, what you just said, Renee. And, Carrie, I have to give you a lot of credit for initiating this battle, because mm-hmm. what you just said a few minutes ago is why companies like this get away with it, because the other side is too beaten down. They're, you know, they either don't know how to fight or they're not up for the fight. And
exactly.
So now it leaves the door open. Yeah, for the same, well, yeah, they give up. But the point is that leaves the door open for the company to not change their practices and to just keep doing it because, like they said to Carrie, you know, like you said, they were calling her bluff. But she's serious, you know, and how many other dozens of women have this happened to that just went on with their lives being emotionally injured, regretting their decision, and having their lives, well, basically ruined, okay, because they didn't have whatever it took to say, hey, this is wrong. You got me at a bad time and took advantage of that. And this has to be, people have to know this is happening and overturning it. And so that's why I credit you, Carrie, because that's what you're doing now. And the more this stays in the limelight and the more people hear about this story, this is how laws get changed. If you look back through some of the laws that did become federally mandated, this is how they got changed, because one person fought back against an injustice that it affected maybe hundreds of other people, but it took that one person, you know, making a point out of it and bringing it to public attention, and that's how positive changes get made. So,
I had a mom last night tell me, because I get through bad days. I have horrible days, and I tell them I get why people give up. I'm beat down. And she told me last night that she lost her son 50 years ago. And the reason why everyone supports me all over the country is it's not just about fighting for my son. It's about fighting for what happened to them. And,
right.
And they don't want this to happen anymore. And when I have my bad days, they call me from all over the country, and they're like, you can't stop fighting. They expect you to stop fighting. But
yeah.
I'm not going to.
No. Well, and, you know, well, there's so many reasons why you have to keep fighting, and there's so many reasons why it's important for people like you to stand up for themselves, because you help the young girl who's standing over in the corner who thinks she's not strong enough to fight. And let me tell you something, if I know one thing, it's women are the strongest people on this earth, hands down.
It's hard.
Yeah, I'm sure it is, honey. I'm sure it's very hard, but it's also hard carrying a baby for 9 months. We all do that. It's also hard giving birth. How many men do you know could give birth? I know I get Shelley and I talk all the time about, I have a lot of men in my life that I love more than anything in the world, but I can get kind of down on the fact that people talk about us like we're the softies and the ones that give in and do this. That is the biggest crock in the world, because we fight. You know, look at lions. The male lion sits home and waits for the lioness to bring home the food, have the babies, do everything. It's pretty much like that in the real world as well. So you can do anything you need to do, and you will. And you will make it through this, and you will survive, and that baby will be back where he belongs. The other thing that I'm struggling with, and I'd love it if you have any kind of reasoning or somebody has filled you in on the legalities of this. So what she said to you was true. I didn't believe it. When you first told me everything that was going on, you said,
that she, Kelly, I believe her name was, counseled you and said, no, now if you give the baby up, you won't get him back anyway. If you don't sign these papers, he's going to go into an orphanage or a foster care. That's all true, right?
Yes.
I said that all right? Okay.
Yes. She used that threat from the beginning.
Uh-huh. So that threat was not idle. So what are the legalities with this? How is it in everything that the public reads about, you know, there are babies, there are children in orphanage. We have, I think it's called Place of Hope here in Florida, and there's all kinds of children that live there. It's an orphanage, a huge orphanage. And they just took over a place called, I'm going to say all the wrong names, so I'm not going to say them, but they just took over another orphanage, and now they're huge. And here's all these kids that will probably come to age 18 in the system. So it's still an issue. Of course, not as big an issue with a beautiful, healthy baby, newborn baby. I get that that's what everybody, you know, is looking for if they're trying to start a family. But how is it that it passes through all the you know, the legal criteria to say, okay, well, the family decided they didn't want him, it would seem like the would just automatically come back to you, just automatically.
One would think.
So what are they telling you why that's not the case? Because you relinquished
because
your rights?
Yeah, because I signed that piece of paper. So, but he's worth too much money to them. That's the reason they won't give them back. And just because one couple gives them back doesn't mean they can't get $30,000 to $40,000 more from another couple for him. One thing Kelly told me when I was in the hospital right after I gave birth is that family just won the lottery. And I was extremely offended by that because he was a little baby boy, healthy, big boy. They won the lottery. That's what she said.
Wow. Are we sure she just wasn't being, you know, you think that's a true fact?
Because babies don't come along a lot in private adoption anymore because of things like foster care and things like that. But their foster care is in an orphanage. She never explained that to me. She made me feel like it was a dirty place and a disgusting place. And I didn't find out until later that foster care was actually a pre-adoptive family home. She didn't ease my fears or anything. I thought he would go into, like, a horrible place, and she didn't do anything to change my mind about that.
Yeah, so he's someplace where people do these people are being paid. So this is another scenario where somebody does it. Let's hope that they do it because they love babies and they want to be there for that beginning time and everything. But of course, we all read the other kinds of stories too. So, but this is a private home that's licensed by the state to take care of this baby. Is that a fair analysis?
Okay. From what we understand, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So your legal representation feels good about this, is worried about this. What kind of assurances is he giving you?
We're positive. We're very positive.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it would seem to me.
Wrong.
Yeah. Well, that seems to be what's blatant to me. But of course, I'm a little prejudiced, I guess, because I know you. So I'm trying to look, like from the outside looking in, and I'm trying to think of all the negative things that people can say about you, and all the negative things they can say about gentle care. And, you know, I'm trying to be like the devil's advocate and think about this from a point of view where I'm not just thinking about, you know, what really should happen, which is your baby come back to you. That's where he belongs, hands down, regardless of anything else. So, but I'm trying to think what kind of fight they're going to put up. So
will
it help?
Yeah.
Can I just say something about that? Is that regardless of anything that I've done in my life or the mistakes I've made in my life, it doesn't take away from what they did was wrong. Period.
Absolutely.
It doesn't change the situation. She should have never taken my consent, and she certainly shouldn't have bullied me into lying and manipulating me by fear. I mean, that
absolutely.
It doesn't matter.
But see, in any other court of law, if a contract was signed under duress, which obviously yours
yeah.
was, and you proved that, the contract gets overturned. You know, I see people go into court, and they have a signed promissory note over money that another person owes them, and 9 times out of 10, those cases are thrown out because the other person says they were under duress just because they don't want to pay it. But if they can really prove, and I've seen a couple of them where the people were able to prove that this person forced them to sign the paper by holding something else over them, either you sign this or that doesn't happen, which put undue pressure on them. So what it does is it invalidates the integrity of the signature, you know, because they weren't signing of their own free will. If you don't sign of your own free will, then it can't be a contractual agreement. So that has to carry a lot of weight. And like I said, and because of the practices of this agency, this is something that needs to become, you know, public knowledge. And it really is something that should become, that really should get out there in a big way, you know, like on Facebook and things like that, and just let people know, you know, about what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because
mm-hmm.
that at some point there, well, I think there just needs to be laws changed. And I don't think it should be state by state. I think this is something that should be federally mandated so that agencies throughout the country have to operate in a way that looks out for the best interest of the child, not the bank account of the agency.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I mean, you know, I think we're all on the same page with that. Like I said, I'm just trying to give us sometimes if we can look at what other people are thinking, we get the advantage, because you should always know what the people fighting against you are thinking and what they're going to use against you. It's just smart. It's smart to be aware of where their minds are at. I think that this law needs to be changed hands down, and I still struggle with why something that has to do with human beings and the lives of others are not the same in our – the word united means that we stick together, doesn't it? Isn't that what we're supposed to be? We're supposed to be all shapes, sizes, creed, religion, nationality, everything in the United States of America is supposed to mean that we all feel the same way about our morals. And a baby and what happened to you is immoral. The fact that somebody, one girl too, that's something else that I'm struggling with. One woman gets the opportunity to change your life, somebody who probably makes $10-$11 an hour, has the opportunity to change your life. That bothers me a lot.
Right.
So what are the steps I'm trying to figure out. I got to get Shelley over here. She's much better on the computer. I'm trying to I belong to an organization called Upworthy, and they send me things all the time, petitions to sign. I'm trying to figure out how to get into them and write a petition that says, you know, we want the laws changed, we want this done, and I'll research other states that carry this 30-day law to change your mind and things like that and see what we're fighting against and have a lot of people sign the petition. Do you think that will help your legal representation?
I said, I mean, if it doesn't help me, it certainly will help people in the future. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I have to change.
Mm-hmm. 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 Okay. Well, I think that, Shelley, let's see how we can do that together. Shelley, do you get Upworthy? Oh, you don't even hardly get on Facebook, do you, Shelley?
No. No, but I can research that, see what I find.
Okay.
Well, Upworthy is an organization that, I mean, they send me a lot of the stories that we do on the show come to me from Upworthy. And they are usually stories of people who are taken advantage of or something bad happens to them and nobody sticks up for them and stuff like this. This is the perfect story for them. So I'm going to get in touch with them and maybe they can help me as well. And if there's anything else that you need, if your lawyer decides he would like to talk on the show, if anybody would like to air all of this so that we get some national attention, let me know, because we'll do whatever we need to do. And I think that you will win because it's what's right. And at the end of the day, it has to be what's right, especially for everybody involved. So are things all right for you at home now on a personal note?
Oh, yeah, things are great. I mean, other than the fight, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's good. I've been a little bit worried about that, and I have not had the opportunity to ask you that. I'm glad. Okay, Shel, do you have any other questions you want to know from Carrie while we have her on the phone?
Yeah, were you given any kind of a realistic time frame from your side as to when this is actually going to start being addressed legally? Because I know sometimes companies can drag things out with motions and things like that, but do you actually have an initial hearing that's been set yet to get in front of a judge or a mediator or an arbitrator?
Well, we just filed late Friday, so the legal process has begun. And because he's an infant, we're fighting to have it done expeditiously because he's so small. So we're also filing in the Supreme Court this week. So we're covering every base to get him home as soon as possible because he's so little.
Well, see, in a situation like that, especially going up in front of the Supreme Court, a lot of times public opinion and public pressure – sometimes do play a role when the judiciaries realize that the general consensus out there is in one direction or another. It can sometimes sway their decisions when they realize they're being watched by the public and that the public is outraged.
Supreme Court just dealt with the Supreme Court in Ohio just dealt with dental care 4 years ago in a similar case, and they returned the child. I mean, they don't look favorably upon things like this, so we're pretty hopeful.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's a big. I knew that because Carrie had told me that before, but I think that's a big part of what's in her favor is that they've already been accused of this and have already lost a case like this. So that in and of itself is going to go in our favor. So. We're just about out of time. Carrie, do you have anything you want to say to anybody who's listening?
No, I just want to thank you and thank Shelley and thank everyone for their support. And, I mean, we can all do this together. It's not just about Camden, my son. It's about being ethically and morally right and doing what's best for our kids, not what's best for the money in our bank account. That's for sure. So I just thank everyone for continuing to talk about it.
Well, and we are for sure going to do that. We're going to talk about it whenever something new comes up or whenever I find something that I think is, has some bearing. And I want to say that, you know, this whole show was based on what happens to kids and based on bullying. And Shelley and I, if we haven't learned anything else, in the past 14 months, it's the fact that bullying is at the crux of almost everything we go through on a daily basis, from home life to social life to work life and certainly to government. So it's all about, you know, who thinks they have the upper hand and what they can get away with. And every time they get away with something, 1,000 more people suffer. So we can't let people keep getting away with being bullies and doing things unethically and doing things without any moral repercussions. So thank you, Carrie, and thank you for joining us today. And I think about you all the time.
So stay strong, and we'll talk soon. Love you.
All right. Love you guys. Love you.
All right.
Thanks, honey.
Thanks, Terry.
Well, I think it's really, really important that we keep every week we will update everybody about this story. And if anybody has any poll, Upworthy.
Upworthy. Okay,
Worthy.
I'm going to research that when we get off the phone.
Okay. All right. So everybody go out there and have a great day. We have doctor's visits this morning, but Shelley and I'll be back tomorrow. We'll get back to the Bullies to Buddies workbook. And ironically, I'm sure we'll find things that pertain to everything that we talked about today in the Bullies to Buddies workbook. So everybody go out and have a great day. Thank you, and God bless. Thanks, Shel.
Thanks, Reen. Have a wonderful day, everyone.
Bye-bye.